Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 395. I'm sitting here at our space at Meltdown. I'm with Katie Levine.
Hi, Katie. Hello.
First of all, thank you to Shure, who gave us a pile of awesome new microphones. So if we sound better and clearer, that is because of them. So thank you, Shure. When did we get these?
About 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now.
They're really snazzy.
They're amazing.
I almost feel like we're doing a professional show. It's only taken 3 years to feel like we're doing a professional show with actual equipment. I went to Corolla Studio last night, and it's like a full-on, there's live streaming and a you know, like windows separating people, like a recording studio. And so now we are one step closer to being a super professional operation.
With our legit mics.
With our legit mites. Mites? I have mites. Will you pick them off me and eat them like a chimp? I just need you to pick the mites off me and then just put them in your mouth. Will you do that?
No.
Are you sure?
It's not part of my job description.
Damn it! You win, human resources. But these are chimp resources. If there was a chimp resources department, it'd be the opposite. Human resources would be like, you can't have employees eat mites off you. Chimp resources would be like, we're going to fire you if you don't have
employees eat mites off you.
That's
your only job. That's your only job.
That's the only thing you're supposed to do. That and throw shit. Now, you haven't done either of those. Human resources would be like, hey, come on. And then 9 more examples highlighting the differences between those two things. So we're doing the my Comedy Central show at midnight, premieres October 28th. At midnight, of course, on Comedy Central. It's at midnight on Twitter, just the at sign and then midnight. And we're doing a bunch of live shows to get ready for it. So live run-throughs at Meltdown on as many Tuesdays as we can before then. So if you go to nerdmeltla.com, you can get info and tickets for that, RSVP. We make tickets available each week. They're free. So RSVP and come and help us, as we try to figure out the show so that we don't have to figure it out on the air. But it's also kind of fun because it really lends itself to being a show to see live. So check that out. Or just follow me on Twitter at Nerdist. I'd like to thank for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, Adult Swim. New episodes of Children's Hospital with Rob Corddry and NTSF SDSUV with Paul Scheer come out every Thursday night, also at midnight. I'm a big fan of these people and these shows. So write it down, clear your schedule. If you like awesome things, then you will watch Children's Hospital. I mean, Katie, I feel like people who listen to the podcast probably already like those things.
Oh, I'm sure.
So maybe I'm just reminding them that it's happening Thursday nights at midnight on Adult Swim. Now, when I say Thursday night at midnight, it's actually Friday morning, technically, right?
Yeah, but you have to say Thursday.
Otherwise,
it gets confusing.
It does, unless you have a reverse schedule and then midnight is your actual morning.
Yeah,
but if that's not the case, it's at the end of Thursday. Let's say, you know what? Start watching at 11:59 p.m. on Thursday. give them an extra minute. That's all we're asking for good comedy. Give them an extra freaking minute. So thanks to Adult Swim for sponsoring this episode of Nerds Podcast. And this podcast is a dear, dear longtime friend of mine, Lauren Graham, who I haven't seen for a long time. And kind of ran into her in an airport and said, you should come on the podcast. And she was like, I'd love to. So this is a fun us kind of catching up that we haven't talked for a really long time. And then also Lauren's on Parenthood. She's written a book called Someday, Someday, Maybe. And I absolutely adore her. And she is hilarious and awesome. So here we go with the Nerds Podcast number. And I believe she on Twitter, I think she's the Lauren Graham. Here we go. The Nerds Podcast number 395 with Lauren Graham.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yeah, so we basically just start recording and okay. That's it. There's no...
Or do I do this or do
you
I just
can.
Talk?
Yeah, there's some right here. Yeah, if you want some headphones.
Do I want some headphones?
It's helpful.
Okay.
It's really nice. I have a great voice.
You have a great voice?
Yeah, it's for you to listen to me.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, it's not for you to listen to yourself.
No, God, no. I don't like listening to myself.
Matt's really taking soothing, right? The wow. Nat King Cole approach of nice. Smoking to make his voice sound more resonant.
Sure.
Yeah. Before I record Christmas song this year, maybe 13 cartons.
Really smoke?
Chestnuts. Mm. He does smoke.
I miss smoking.
It's great.
Yeah.
It is
out.
Not great.
Chris, calm down. We're having a conversation.
Matt, I saw you at the gym today, and you left, and you were like, I'm going to go smoke. I'm like, you fucking moron. Why would you do that?
I ran really far on a treadmill, and I earned it.
You don't run to cigarettes.
You don't? Hang on. How do you get them then?
They're not supposed to be the little
how do you get
tobacco carrots dangling in front of your
How do you
treadmill?
Get cigarettes then? You have to run to them.
Oh, so, man, you got to
put in the
that.
Work. By the time
you
I get lung
it.
Cancer, I can probably just get a rat and grow a lung on its back. Like medical technology.
So you're going to go one of them lung rats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Medical technology's going to catch up.
Everyone assumes.
We'll all be fine.
You know, by 30 years or so, they're going to be able to. They could drain all your blood, give you new organs.
Oh, I love it. They can already drain most of your blood, right?
Do you have any idea how long I've known
I missed
this,
the Lance
this woman, Lauren Graham?
Don't mind me. Oh, Jesus.
Mid-90s?
Late 90s.
Late 90s.
Yeah.
Same diff.
Late 90s.
Dave Matthews Band, just as popular.
not with us, I don't feel.
That's too bad. You guys have a lot to learn.
I don't remember. I just have images of you at parties, at the parties that I used to have at that old house.
You and Connie Britton and Jen Johnston, and there was this
Melissa.
There was this coven of actresses who would get together. And,
why
and,
so evil? We were witchy.
No. It would change. Like one weekend it would be at your place, another weekend it would be
right.
at Connie's place, and then
right.
another, and then you know Jen and Pete.
Yes.
Your Glockenspiel lesson. But the images that I have, Lauren Graham, are getting really drunk. And hitting on you, I can't even know if I can count the number of times where I would get kind of drunk and be like, seriously, we should just go out. And you were like, no.
Why was I like, no, though?
Because I was a fucking drunk pile of booze.
But so cute. Who cared?
Hey, all right. Anyway. Yeah.
I don't remember why no. I just remember the good times. I remember the happy, happy good times.
They were good. They were good fun times.
Yeah.
They were really good fun times.
And I remember you brought your own six-pack in general.
Well, that was a little pregame. That was pregame.
It was
but
never
I always was like, yeah, no, because I will always like, I remember having a party where I had like a band like in the living room. I would never, how dare I, you know? And so I had like margarita machines and stuff, but you would bring your own whatever it was that you
was
enjoyed.
Disgusting.
What was your poison at the time?
You know, it varied of the type of beer. Might have been like a Sapporo or like a Red Hook or something along those
What
ways.
Year is this for you?
This was
pre
2000, probably 99.
Really?
So this is post singled out.
Post singled out.
Is this
but I remember it pre Gilmore. Oh no, it can't be pre Gilmore Girls.
It was kind of pre Gilmore though.
But then I was friends with Melissa, which is how I met Sam, and I met Melissa on Gilmore Girls. So it had to be.
Melissa McCarthy, yes.
During Gilmore Girls.
Maybe it was around the time. It was kind of like right around the beginning. I specifically remember coming to a party that you had
At Stars Hollow?
It was not.
At the gazebo? At Luke's?
It was at the Brown Derby, I believe it was.
Oh, God.
And it was a
What was this, in the 40s? What are you talking about?
Yeah, we're at the Brown Derby.
The Brown Derby doesn't exist anymore.
That's right. Okay.
No, was it Brown Derby or was
Elaine
and what's his nuts?
It was
the piano playing couple.
Marty and Elaine.
Yeah, Marty
and
Elaine.
The friggin' Dresden.
The friggin' Dresden.
Might have been the Dresden. No, this was a house party that you were having, and it was a game night. I had come from a drinking contest.
How'd you do?
I won, and I was proud of it.
Let's back this up.
What?
What do you, how do you just come, where do you find a drinking contest?
I think you make one and then you win it.
You fucking make one, dude. It's like there was another comic named Bob Powers, and he was also very proud of how much he could drink. And so it was Friday night, and we did a show in Westwood. I helped book a show in Westwood at the Gypsy Cafe. And so we said, let's make a drinking contest. We'll host the show and have other comics come on. And in between, we'll do mini drinking contests as we bring people up. So I got this Batman cape and cowl, and I called myself the Lager Bat. Oh, this is fucking gross.
Oh, my God.
And
why did it have to have a superhero component?
Because
it doesn't make sense.
Because it was extra awesome. Because Bruce Wayne had a tragic story where he fought crime. I had a tragic story where I had to suppress all that rage with alcohol. And so... we did this drinking contest, and I went to your place, and I believe there were margarita machines, and you were doing – it was a big, like, multiplayer charade game.
Yeah.
Which was super fun.
It was fun, but then we had to shut those down because people started taking it too seriously and getting upset. I remember, like, there was a bad turning point of game night where it became like, he spoke during the charade. Like, people got so shrill and horrible that I was like, I don't think this is healthy anymore. We had to stop it.
It's not fun.
No, but it's just like, you know, any sort of time that seems really great, it can't last forever, you know?
Right.
But then, and now the only games night I ever go to are really stressful and horrible. And I feel that they should all be shut down as well. It's like, when did it become something we're taking seriously?
Yeah.
As, you know, like, as, and being offended in our hearts.
It should not feel like the audition process.
No,
where
no.
You're like, oh, fuck,
well, because what are the stakes, really? There are none.
There are
just
none.
Your pride, which can be the worst stake of all.
Their pride. And, you know, listen, there is, some actors are, you know, like, are generally nice people, but also a little competitive.
Horrible.
And some of them can be horrible and a little... like indignant.
Yeah, maybe that was it. Maybe I was like, I don't need to see the inner you to this degree. I'd like to go back to the superficial you that I knew better.
Well, we're just hanging out and having fun as opposed to like, well, if this is how it's going to be, Lauren.
Yeah. But so yeah, then games night went away.
And then it went, I'm sorry that happened.
That's all right. Maybe we can, I mean, look, we're having this reunion. Maybe there'll be some games night reunion.
We should do a games night reunion.
Yeah.
So what, I think it was like 99 when I first met you with Jen Johnston. And was that, when was Townies?
When I knew wasn't
you.
Townies?
Because I remember you from that show. And I was like, oh, that's my friend Lauren Graham. And I remembered you as being really funny.
That's nice. That is very nice. I don't know how funny I was on Townies, but the Townies was like 96, I think, 97. It went like this. It went Caroline in the City, Townies. Don't.
No,
this
I'm remembering.
Like, Matt knows all these shows. This is a walk down 90s lane.
Yeah.
This is a walk down NBC schedule.
It was. This is when, it was the NBC Thursday night. And so it went Caroline in the City. And then I did Townies. And then something called Good Company, it was called, with John Tenney, that was on CBS, maybe. And then, what? And the news radio. News radio was somewhere in there. I don't remember when. And then MYOB. Why am I giving you my resume?
No, please.
No, we know
continue.
All these. We know,
continue.
And then I was just trying to put place us in time. And then Gilmore Girls was 2000. So I don't know. But did I meet you through Melissa or through Jen Johnston?
It was through Jen Johnston.
Oh, okay.
I knew Melissa before, obviously, because of her cousin.
Right.
Because she was – Melissa Missy was a PA on Jenny's show, and I was always like, but Missy's hilarious. Why wouldn't she have a sketch show? Like, it always felt so when she totally, like, you know, like blew up, it was like, oh, there's justice.
I felt similarly really, I don't know what the word is, gratified, I guess, that because she was great on Gilmore Girls, but then you'd go see her in Groundlings and it was a completely different performer.
She's
different
a whole
person,
other level.
A whole other level. And it seemed like it just seemed criminal in a way that the two were coexisting because it was so not what she did. I mean, again, she was wonderful on Gilmore Girls, but it was just not what she was meant to do. Now she's doing what she was meant to do.
Right. How long did it take? How long were you sort of in the audition machine before it started? Like, when did you move out to Los Angeles and start all that?
I was in the audition machine in New York for a really long time. And, you know, kind of on a treadmill or a, what are the hamsters on?
Hamster wheel.
A hamster wheel.
The high-tech hamsters.
Are on a treadmill now?
The 1% hamsters okay. have treadmills.
They also
the really fit ones who don't smell.
Yeah, and they wear other animals' fur.
The rats are on the treadmills growing the lung.
that are going to help
gonna save
you
Matt.
When you...
That's going to be a giant fucking rat, by the way, to house a lung
I've seen some big
on
ones
their body.
New York, right?
It's basically just like a waffle with feet, like a giant organ growing on a tiny creature.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm worried about you.
No, I think you're going to be okay.
His shoulder's the burden.
But so I was in New York for a long time. I went to grad school. I was a cocktail waitress at the Improv, at the old Improv on 46th
right.
Street.
I think we've had this conversation.
Really?
That's amazing.
Yeah, because in my, I have a thing for comics, which is why I'm surprised I didn't go out with you. Because
I think I was so broken that you were like, I think this one might be even a little too broken for me.
But I just loved that world, and I never wanted to be a stand-up, but I appreciated it so much. And so, I don't know, I was a cocktail waitress at the Improv, and I worked in commercials. I started getting commercials, but I didn't really ever audition for anything real. And then I got a test, my first test for news radio, and I couldn't do it because I was shooting like a weekend with the movie channel or like some hosting gig that I had. But it gave me encouragement to come to LA, and I came to LA and I got a pilot quickly that didn't go.
So you're a good auditioner. It seems like you might be a good auditioner because you worked pretty much every year.
From then on. But I mean, to me, the road to get to that place where I started, getting pilots every year was pretty long. I mean, I remember lying about my age back when you could do that because there was no IMDb, and like being really afraid to, get to 30 because I thought like that was the end. So I remember feeling like this is coming to me late, but.
But that can't be true though, right? Because a lot of it, like, did you feel like in retrospect, like, oh, I didn't know what I was talking about?
I think I have always had a healthy sense of impending doom, and it was definitely.
I've never heard healthy and doom in such close juxtaposition.
Well, I'd rather have that than to me. Like most actors, fall into one of two categories: the "of course I got it," and the "how did I get it?" And I definitely am and was the latter. And so it was always a surprise to me. Yes, in retrospect, I probably could have. Felt a little more confident, but I don't know. That's just not how it was. And also, it was a different time of like, there was a half hour. There were, you would test for things in first, second, and third position.
The golden age of sitcoms.
There were so many pilots. Yeah. And so many half hours. And that, so I just happened to hit a good, time in terms of what was going on.
It was right before all the reality shows absorbed all of the. There was one specific pilot season that I remember where I was like, where's all the shows?
Well, I remember it was game shows first. First, I remember seeing some upfronts, and it wasn't even Millionaire. It was some lesser game show. And I was like, game shows in prime time? What a crazy, that'll never last.
Although I'll tell you, every time they do a Price is Right, prime time, I'm on board. I'm on board. Plinko at 8 p.m., sign Matt Myra up.
It sort of feels like, it feels naughty for some reason. Like, I shouldn't be allowed to enjoy this at this hour. What is this, like eggs for dinner?
Exactly.
Price is Right makes me feel sad and depressed.
Because it makes you think of not working?
I don't know. It's just the dressing up and the excitement over so much for so little. It just makes me sad.
We do Talking Dead in a one floor up from the Price is Right stage. and every time there's a guest, every time, every week, I'll take a guest down. They just leave the fucking wheel out.
Right.
It's
oh
just
my
out
God.
At CBS. It's just out. It's like, oh, there's the Bold and Beautiful stage. That's still a thing. And then the fucking Price is Right wheel.
Oh my God.
And everyone's like, can I spin it? Like, everyone wants to spin it. And it's a really fun.
Let me ask you this. When you spin it, can you plug it in? Can you plug it in and make it do anything? Does it have the, because the sound
No.
Is the dinging real?
I need to know.
Here's how far my host gene goes.
Yeah.
When people spin the wheel, I want them to feel like they're getting a good experience. So I send off to the side and go, boop. Like I do that for them just to give them the full experience. And it works.
Why have I never gone to a taping of The Talking Dead just for that experience?
I don't know. Well, now we're doing the Breaking Bad one and we're one floor up. So
I guess Sunday's free.
There's a whole section of that where it's all the Price is Right games and they're just like shoved up against the side of the
wall. Our line producer for Nerdist, he was a big game show fan, Jade. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I was on Price is Right. I was their biggest winner. And I was like, fuck, really? YouTube, boom. He won like a car, an RV. He won both showcases. The guy,
wow.
He won like 70 something thousand dollars worth of stuff.
It is weird. I mean, the show really could just be called, how much is this shit? Because everything is like, how much is this brown furniture sectional?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Who knows that?
And putting the car price numbers in a row.
In
that
order.
Really stresses me out. I can't watch people do it.
Do you know how,
I don't like it.
Do you know how excited I would get during a hole in one when Bob Barker would go over and hit the top of it and it would go, or two? And I'd be like, well, then he's got another chance. Amazing.
When you were a waitress at the Improv, was there ever any sort of like, don't fuck the comics rule, or was there ever, or
well,
did you have a personal,
what
like,
comedy clubs have you been to?
Well,
the rule is quite the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this also makes me question all my life choices, because in further things coming full circle, one of the comics who was a frequent performer at the time was Ray Romano, who's mm-hmm. now been on The Parenthood Show playing my sometime boyfriend. And this is like every conversation I ever have with Ray, as if he's forgotten that he asked me already. So, no, what comics hit on you? I'm like, I don't really remember any. He's like, come on. What comics hit on you? I'm like, I don't think any, Ray. Can we please stop having this conversation? I don't remember that being a thing. I remember it being very separate, because the world of waitressing there is so structured, and you have to get, you know, your drinks out. And there was no like after hang. Plus, I also worked at Barney's New York at 8 a.m. the next morning. I don't think I hung, and I didn't like...
You worked at Barney's and then by night?
Yes.
Wow.
What was your commission like at Barney's?
I think it was good, but these are jobs I just was completely ill-equipped for. You know, I was selling to women with you know, jobs in law firms and stuff, who would ask me about, you know, is this blouse appropriate for the workplace? And I was like, I just got out of acting school. Looks good to me. Like, I had no idea.
If
what
I was playing a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say okay.
Exactly. I mean, the jobs I have fibbed my way into are quite astonishing, and that was one of them. Like, fashion? No, it's terrible. And I remembered that when they asked me to be a judge on Project Runway, and I was like, naturally, a return to my fashion roots. And then I got there, and I was like, oh yeah, I don't know anything about fashion, and I feel bad criticizing people. This is a terrible combination. And so I'd be like, it looks like you tried real hard. It was just like a bad idea.
You know what you could do is you could just pick one phrase, and you could say it sincerely to the people who did it well, and sarcastically to the people where you're like, nice pants. Like, you could just stick
well,
with that.
Because you get in this, like, you know, you're there with Michael Kors, who's like, it looks like a Tunisian bath mat or something. And you're like, it's so genius and yet so horrible, you know. And I had no similar turn of phrase.
Michael Kors had the same. I watched probably the first four seasons of Project Runway.
Yeah.
And he has the same greeting every time.
Hi, guys.
Guys. Hi, guys. Guys.
But he's hilarious.
He's really funny. Yeah. But the girl who does wardrobe for me on all the shows I work on was one of the contestants on Project Runway.
Oh, wow.
Kit.
Okay.
And so we always joke about it, because I love Tim Gunn so much.
I love him so much. It's a problem.
I think of him as Steve Father Martin's
figure?
Gay brother.
Okay.
He looks like Steve Martin to me.
He does.
But
he
looks like Steve Martin's gentler, like the one that you would go to if you needed support.
I have Tim Gunn fantasies that when I met him on Project Runway, he's truly the most gracious. Like, he fulfills all your expectation. He's like, what a wonderful start to the season. I'm so glad to see you. And I was like, he probably thinks my name is Kim, but like, I don't care. He's made me feel like the most special person in the universe. It was so beautiful.
He's one of those guys that I think, and I never bother people in public, but he's one of those guys, if I saw him in public, I'd have to go up and be like, can I just say hi to you, please?
Yeah. And you know his story, right? That, I mean, I don't know any details about it, but the folklore is that he had there's Tim Gunn folklore. I don't think there isn't.
I hear tales.
Let me tell you about Timmy Gunn.
That he had a relationship that, for whatever reason, ended.
Oh, yeah.
And he hasn't had devastated sex in like 30 years.
Well, that he said, that's it. Forget it. I'm never again.
Timmy put away his gun that day.
Well played.
You're welcome.
But that
nice pants.
Speaks nice pants. But that speaks further in a strange way to his heart, his big-heartedness, that he couldn't weather another.
Well, I think he just sort of blurted it out very nonchalantly on a morning show or
really?
Something, like a TV morning show, where it was like, oh, I haven't been with someone in like 27 years. Like, it was right. just some very like casual, yeah. like, oh, this is just how it is. And they're yeah. like, wait, what, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And to him, it's just like, oh, it's just not really.
Well, if it wasn't going to be that person, it's not going to be anybody.
It's not going to be anybody. Yeah. yeah.
That's the poetry of Tim Gunn.
We have to find, that's the next reality series, is we have to find
Tim Gunn.
Oh.
Yes.
I don't know.
We gotta find Tim Gunn a lady.
No. I think
no. I understand the premise of the show.
No.
It's a dating show.
No, it's different. No.
We gotta
it's
get
totally
Tim Gunn
no.
laid.
Yeah, well, half right.
We'll just take him to the improv.
Nope.
Have him do a set. Afterwards, pussy.
No.
But not with the waitress named Lauren, because she never got any.
Did you ever watch? I always feel bad for the waitresses in the servers in the comedy clubs because.
Me too, mostly. Because I'm performing.
Well, it's because you know they see roughly. My set changes a little bit each time, but basically they see a lot of the same jokes for five straight shows.
Yeah.
Did that ever bother you? Or did you just
no,
tune
I love
it out?
It. I really love it, and I appreciated the you know subtle changes every night. I mean, that's the business or the work, the pursuit we're all in is telling the same story with some sort of. You know, making it new. And I loved it. And there were certain bits that like just never, ever got old for me. You know, Dave Attell worked the door at the time and they'd let him go on sometimes at like 3-4 in the morning. And, and it was horrible, you know, it's still like two people and he had, I can't, as much as I tell you, I could have listened to it a million times. I can't remember it, but it was a bit about the Indian who cries about pollution. And it was just, it got me every time. So I don't know. I loved it.
Who were some of the other performers swirling around there?
Well, you know, Billiam Cornell. Anyone?
I don't know him.
Louis C.K.
Of course.
I've heard of him.
I think Bill Burr may have been, he was younger, but I mean, it was, Judy Gold
uh-huh.
did a bit about if she had a, her own show, the opening credits would be her, because she had these like spit curls, that was part of her look at the time,
yeah.
and that it would be her sliding down her own spit curl. It's Judy's show. I always thought that was amazing. I don't know, it's just such an odd.
She was on Chopped.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Celebrity Chopped. She did not win.
She was funny.
She was really
I was actually always surprised. When I first met you, first started hanging out with you, there are some people who are funny and there are some people who are like, comic funny
mm-hmm.
and I was like fucking Lauren's really comic funny like you
Dude.
really like the sort of the hangouts and the riffing and the back and forth and the super fast banter like it's you could have been a comic I think if you wanted to be.
God bless you. I don't know why it's one of the things that many things that frighten me I have attempted and that's just one I don't know it was more fright than I could handle.
Well, I think at this point it probably wouldn't be fun and rewarding because
no.
there's a lot of like going on late to two people.
Yeah,
and then
right.
like you know, I even think myself because I perform out of town a lot, I could perform locally more and I don't because I'm like, do I want to drive to Santa Monica to do this show to just
right.
do like 7 minutes? Like I just get tired. You
yeah.
know? Like you just.
Well, it's a very. I mean, I have a dear friend who I went to college with who still performs and. You know, it's a really hard life, and it only gets harder. You know, I did a movie with Joel McHale this summer. He like left on a red eye to go perform for a college in Michigan, you know, and then come back to work 12 hours later.
Yeah, but he came back with a suitcase full of money.
I know, that's probably true.
The suitcase was made of money.
Yeah.
And then there was money in
and
it.
And inside of it were very tight t-shirts.
He's in good shape.
He's in really good shape.
He played football in college.
Oh my God, it's insane.
He's a monster.
He's tall and
he's very tall.
He's tall and cut.
Yeah.
But it's just that suitcase full of money there, and they're just, it's like the Benjis are getting pregnant and having more Benjis inside. So by the time he gets to where he's going, there is twice as much money as by the time he got there.
Still, it's stressful. All that travel.
Yeah, you don't know if your flight's going to be on time. What's the snack going to be like? Is there Wi-Fi on the plane? No, because it's regional. What the fuck, man?
Do you have the ocean view or not?
I do have a funny story. Like my manager used to have a business partner, and his business partner managed one of the blue collar guys. I think maybe it was Ron White. And Ron was, I mean, like they would do these weekends where they would make just obscene amounts of money. And he had a private jet, and the private jet broke down, so they got him another one. And I guess that one, there was something wrong with that one. And so he said to his manager, like, man, I tell you, sometimes it just ain't worth it. And Alex and I would joke and go, no, it's literally worth it. It is literally worth it. In your private jet. They would get these checks that would just show up of like, $90,000. Where did this come from? Oh, there were a series of air fresheners that we sold with your face on them. Oh, great. You know, just like that. It was like that kind of shit.
That reminds me of a slight moral dilemma I had recently, which is I did this movie Bad Santa.
Yes. A classic long time ago.
And recently, I know not why, they were trying to do some Bad Santa merchandising and sent me for my approval. And it was one of these like, must hear back in 48 minutes or we'll go ahead without you. And it was like a picture of Billy Bob and I and with the line, fuck me Santa. And I was like, and it's going to go on mugs and t-shirts. And I was like, hey, why now? Why did somebody woke up and was like, ah, there's an opportunity we missed. We can still
bring it back. It's some marketing guy who has an empty mug.
Yeah.
And he's watching Bad Santa one morning like, Oh, wait a minute.
But you know, in the business we're in, like people have to take all this stuff seriously in case I might be like, yes, I think that's a wonderful opportunity and the perfect turn for my career to take. And so like they're like, approval? And I was like, what? Are you kidding? No, I can't. I don't know. I was like, would that be the money-making opportunity? Would that be my Benji suitcase?
I'm sorry.
I don't know if you need that to be... No way! Not in a million years.
You don't need it frozen on mugs.
I just mean, like, these are the kinds
Especially in six months when it's a dollar at Spencer Gift.
Oh 6 months! They're, like, buying it back on Amazon.
You put on sunglasses, you're just buying them all at Oz buys them.
They sit on a Spencer's gift shelf next to those dice that tell you what sex position to take.
I've never seen those.
Have you been in a Spencer's gift? That's pretty much all there is.
And lava lamps. To be fair, there's lava lamps.
I don't know. I just thought the world is strange. But anyway, you guys, I said no.
And you don't want people running up those streets like, hey, fuck me, Santa!
I don't want to be on a mug at all, like of any kind. I don't want, you know. But this was a particular.
What if they had come to you and said, here, we're going to do this. It's a Lorelai Gilmore edition Jeep Wrangler. Are you on board?
What would it be? What would it be?
Let's see.
There would be a lot of snack food.
It would be tough but fair.
Coffee. Coffee
and
maker.
The Jeep you always wished you had.
Yeah, exactly. It's like your buddy, but it also tells you what to do.
Bumper sticker.
It's the parent friend Jeep.
And then it also has another Jeep that comes with it that's a little bit older that kind of gets in the way sometimes.
Younger Jeep. Yeah.
There's a younger Jeep and an older Jeep.
Right.
Then one Jeep's trying to manage both.
And then
Jeeps.
It has the romantic comedy Jeep that's like has a backwards baseball hat on it, and they just can't seem to make it work together. But they have good chemistry.
Really thought they were gonna pull it through. Really, really did.
All right. So basically, what we've just done for Disney is pitch the Cars Gilmore Girls mashup.
I'm watching it.
No, I don't want to be any merchandise. I don't think unless it was a superhero, I guess. But I mean, really, the time for that is gone.
By the time Gilmore Girls came around, were you like sick of the bit? Like, was there any point where you're like, I'm fucking done with this. I don't want to do this shit anymore. Or were you still pretty open to it? Like, did you enjoy the process of that show, or were you kind of exhausted by that point?
Well, but when I started that show, I had bounced around from all these different things that had gotten canceled, and so my assumption was that things just get canceled. And but I do remember really connecting to that character, and people were like, "You don't want to be on that network." This, it was still very new, the WB, and you shouldn't play a mom. You're too, and none of that that didn't cross my mind. I just thought, "Oh, here's a good character." So at the beginning of that show, I was really energized and excited to do that writing. It's just the hours were insane, and it went on for seven years.
Single camera is pretty fucked up.
And it was this brand of, and it's all the stuff that, you know, made the show different, which was these long walk and talks and with no cuts, and you know, but so you'd have to get these long speeches completely perfect in one take, and that was hard. So it was just a really long day. So by the end, I was tired, but not of that character. I was just tired.
Yeah, the fucking you get, and also you could get sort of spoiled with the sitcom schedule where you're like, 10 to 4, we do like a run through in the afternoon. Yeah. I fucked up a line. Now there's four cameras.
It's so funny that I just read the other day that Jennifer Aniston and Matthew Perry and Lisa Kudrow were all saying how sorry they were that Friends ended, and then I like was reading the quote from Jennifer Aniston, and she's just talking about the hours,
right?
And how much fun they had.
Yeah,
and I was like, of course, it's a fucking sitcom.
Yeah, that is the most fun, and also that live audience thing is really great, and yeah, this show was just, it was just hard. So,
I enjoyed it.
No,
I literally own all 7 seasons on.
Really?
DVD. Yeah.
Do you have the Barbie box?
I don't have the Barbie box. I
didn't have
them.
One either. I bought one. Single. They're very expensive.
Yeah, they are.
What the heck?
They are very.
You probably
expensive.
Could ask someone. They, you know,
but that was probably as close as I'll ever come to action figure. I mean, because when I saw the Barbie box, I was like, "This is seconds away from the Midge Barbie." Dolls.
Yeah, then when that set came on, I was like, oh, should I like this show?
Yeah.
That's the box set. The box set that they had was it's like a Barbie playhouse.
Yeah.
I was like, well, all right. It's funny.
So how's Parenthood been?
It's been great. It's like the complete opposite. So Gilmore Girls ended. I went to do a Broadway show, which was really challenging. And I did all these movies that no one saw. and I looked at and I read a bunch of stuff and I didn't know what I wanted to do exactly. And this was it was as close as I'd found in terms of, I didn't want to play, I know it's another single mom, but it was a different tone. And it was not, what I liked about her were sort of the broken aspects, which then, I don't know, didn't end up being exactly where the story went. It's not the show to you know, I was like, yeah, she's going to have real troubles and maybe she'll be like a, you know, an alcoholic. And like, and they were like, that's not really the show apparently. Like we're telling sort of a happier family story. And, but I really connected to it when I read it and I knew he had a great reputation, Friday Night Lights and stuff. And it's an amazing group of people and it's an amazing work day that is not 50 million hours. And
Coach is there.
And Coach is there.
Yeah.
Who's awesome. So it's just, you know, and we get to improvise some. And so, and they shoot it almost proscenium, you know, there's 4 cameras going at a time. So we go so fast.
Oh, there you go.
That's the Friday Night Lights model of kind of set it up in a way where you can get the coverage all at the same time, which is amazing.
So you don't shoot for 3 minutes and then go wait 2 hours in your trailer
and then
come
try
back
to replicate what you did.
Yeah.
So it's been a really positive experience and allowed me to kind of do some other, you know, stuff as well. Like it was just honestly the exact opposite where I'd be like, I'm done at noon. What am I, what do I do now? So I wrote a book.
It's always on every time. Did the book come out yet?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's a book. Well, I have Chris, one in the car.
It's a collection of words.
Sifting through my notes here,
I wrote...
my notes are on my keys.
The words form sentences. The sentences form paragraphs. The paragraphs form chapters.
Let me tell you.
Book.
I wrote a book about a young actress in the 90s.
Yes.
It is. It's me, but it's not. And it...
That
came,
would be an
hit
amazing
the
title,
New York Times
way.
Bestseller list. By the way, that's what I should have called it, because it's called Someday, Someday, Maybe, which is very unwieldy. And I've sold it as a pitch to the CW, and I'm writing the pilot.
Nice. Holy shit!
Yeah. So that's what I do.
That's amazing.
So that's the one of the many gifts of parenthood, which is not only does my boyfriend work there and the hours are really good, but I you know, kind of had a little bit of freedom to cook something else up.
So do you enjoy the writing process?
It's you know, I turn when I started working with my editor, who's a very smart person and a writer herself. I said, I haven't done anything of this length before, and just so you know, I was an English major and I wrote my senior thesis pretty much the night before, like on the typewriter, and she's like, okay, well, just so you know, I finished my senior thesis 2 weeks early, and I didn't tell anybody because I didn't want them to think I was a geek. And I was like, oh my God, are you in for it? Because she was, you know, completely very disciplined, and I am not. So it was really, really hard. And I would do a lot of things differently. But I don't know, there was just something, it was something I could do without needing anyone else. And I could just, you know, give myself something creative to do. And then the fact that it sold and it sold pretty well was good, but I would have just done it on my own because my mind, I can't, you know, I there's some job in between Gilmore Girls and in terms of hours that I haven't quite hit yet. Yeah. Like I have to.
Well, let
be
me
working.
Tell you, EPing and creating a show is not that in between.
Yeah, I know. Believe me.
You know, you're going to have to answer a lot of questions about things.
I know.
Because no one else is going to know those answers because it came out of your brain.
I know.
But I always, I mean, you know, maybe it didn't feel like this to you because you pretty much worked every year. But the path of acting was, I hated it. Which is why I stopped auditioning years ago, because I felt too powerless. I felt too like, I can't, you know, wait around until someone decides that I am famous enough or attractive enough or something enough to that I have no control over. Like, that process just felt so awful to me.
Well, and I will say, too, it starts, I think, as, I don't know if it's getting older or having done it for a while, it's what is the meaning of it? You know what I mean? It's sort of like you get the job or you don't get the job or you know, it starts to, for me, I'm more interested in what is my day? What's my day like? What's my day of work? And less, I find that kind of like buzz of like, I got a thing and it's really exciting and it's going to come out all over the place and everybody's going to go see it. It's like after you've gone through it enough, it's just, it's you have to just keep feeding that thing or you feel depressed, and I don't think that's healthy, you know? So I don't know. I have turned more inward. And it doesn't mean that all the stuff that's exciting isn't exciting. It's just, I don't know.
You just mean it doesn't mean everything.
It doesn't mean everything.
You don't define yourself by it.
I mean, I think it's a hard balance to strike, but I don't know. I start to look around and think, like, is it really, if I get the part in the thing, I don't know. Does it change anything? Does it make my day at home better?
Well,
you know?
I think most people assume that, you know, there's this thing that's out there in the world, and then they will acquire this thing, and then that will fix them in some way or make all their problems go away, and then they don't. That doesn't happen. No, that's not.
That's how it works.
You're not going to get
your. It does solve your problems.
I'm pretty sure it's
that lung rat's not going to solve all your emotional problems.
It will.
It'll just keep you alive
it
longer.
It will also
to
be my best friend.
Them,
it will also be my best friend.
Not after you destroy the rat to take the lung off it.
Oh, just grows like that mouse with the ear.
I don't think you know how science is, but I think that do you like figuring out a way to be happy without that stuff is obviously challenging for a lot of people, particularly with what we all
do. Of course,
Because we're all sort of, we're all a little broken going into it,
totally.
I think.
Totally. Well, why else would you want to put yourself, it's like, you know, it's, why would you want to be in a relationship? It's like being in a relationship with somebody who doesn't call you. Mm-hmm. How long can you really say that's your boyfriend, you know, if the phone is not ringing? And you see people stay in it way past the amount of time they would stay in a healthy relationship with a person, you
right.
know? So, but I'm not, on the other hand, I have as much enthusiasm for being creative as I did when I got here. I just, I know that no matter what you get to, it isn't going to fill whatever that void is. So, but I'm still excited about being an actor, and I'm really excited to work on this new fun thing. I don't know. It sounds so phony, but I am truly less attached to what happens with it, you know?
Well, it's a nice feeling, and maybe obviously this comes with experience or age or whatever, but that one day where you kind of go, I guess I don't need this thing. Mm-hmm. I enjoy doing it, but mm-hmm. it's not so much like I need it.
Well, it starts to...
The desperation's gone.
Yeah, and there's a, you know... It's also like I'm not scraping my rent together as I was in the years when I was really struggling. So I have I can feel a little safety and peace in terms of like I'm going to live, you know, and I'm going to live.
Yeah. You're going to live.
Well,
you're going
to live.
Here, let me correct it. You're going to maintain your standard of living.
Not necessarily. But yeah, I don't know. You just start to see people really clinging to it's something that is behind them, and I don't want to be there for sure. So I don't know. I'll just keep trying to have a fun time at doing whatever I'm doing. I don't know.
Do you like the wisdom? Do you like getting older and feeling wiser? I've been thinking about this a lot lately.
Really?
Yeah. Because like part of me is like, I don't want to get older, but then I'm like, but I don't feel as dumb as I used
yeah.
to feel. You know? So
yeah.
like, there is sort of a comfort of like, I don't know. It's hard to see it when you're 25 because, like you said, oh, when I'm 30, it's all going to be over.
Yeah.
And then you go, no, when you turn, you just turned 30.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
But it is sort of that feeling of like, oh, yeah, I kind of feel okay. Like, it's
yeah.
not, I don't feel the way I thought it would be, which was like, it's all over, you know?
Yeah. I do. I feel a sense of, in I think a very positive way, a slight detachment and like it's not everything I'm living for. And I can absolutely remember, and it wasn't that long ago when it was some idea of what was next and what was better, you know, was the thing I was thinking about a lot of the time. And I just don't feel that way anymore. And it's not for lack of ambition or drive or all that stuff. It's just, I don't know. It all sounds so stupid, but I just do have a different piece about it. Like I've experienced enough of what the exciting parts of it can be that I know that there's, you know, I always think of at the Golden Globes one year. I was like at the Golden Globes, and I was nominated for a Golden Globe, and I had thought that this was going to be like the most exciting thing. You know, I had built something like that up in previous years to like, well, and then that's going to feel like that's going to feel.
Right.
And I was there, and I was like crammed into this table in the back, and I was there with somebody from work, and I didn't know anybody, and I had sort of had a date with a guy who was kind of ignoring me. Like those were all the things
he was ignoring you at
yeah.
the Golden Globes that
well,
you were nominated for.
Well,
yeah,
Jack Nicholson's like, over there. I mean,
yeah, he was like working the room, and I was like,
oh, that's gross.
Yeah, I know. And so I was just like, I was like, wait, this is nothing like, and like, it just wasn't anything like what I thought it would be, and I couldn't wait to get home, and so. If you are in a way it's lucky enough to have the experiences that ruin all your childhood visions of what something's going to be. I've been lucky enough to have my childhood dreams destroyed, but I'm thankful because if I was still like, you guys, you want to go to that thing? I mean, it's like, I remember one, Sundance festival with, I believe that we coined this term, but it probably already exists. I was with a friend and we were like, oh, this is the party. This party. And then we get to the party. It was horrible. And we go, no, no, we heard about this other party. We got to go. We got to go. And I was like, we're chasing the fun. We're chasing the fun. And it just may not exist. And so, like, you have enough of those and you're like, the fun just happens when it happens. And I don't know. It's just all so
silly. I like that phrase.
Chasing the fun.
Chasing
right?
the fun.
You got to shut it down. If you realize at a certain point that you're chasing the fun, you're not. It's you got to just go home and watch
TV. How many
TV.
Awful things have happened in our lives collectively because we're chasing the fun because yeah. we don't know how to just have fun.
Be the fun.
Yeah, you don't know how to fun yeah. where you are. It's like, it's over there. It's over there.
Yeah.
It's basically like fucking, like the universe, you're a cat and the universe has a laser pointer. You're just like, there
exactly.
it is.
Exactly.
Look at there.
Exactly.
Like, fuck out.
Yeah.
You know.
And again, I don't I feel that it sounds cynical, but it is the opposite of cynical. It's like it's some horrible like Pollyanna part of me that I didn't used to have where I'm like it's not out there. It's kind of in here and that's the place to look, guys.
You have to look inside.
Within.
You have to look deep inside.
Wonderful. Let's everything. All take a moment. And
let's
look
have
in.
Some tea and get a pull up Toni Morrison book up on our
Let's go back to this Golden Globe situation.
No.
That's so gross. Were you dating this guy?
No. It wasn't I'm probably making it too we were not a thing. It was just a
no,
guy
you went
I
on
liked.
A, you went on a,
yeah.
went on a date.
It was a guy I liked. And I was like, and then I'll be in my dress and we'll be at the Golden Globe. And it just wasn't, and nothing horrible happened. It just wasn't that way. And I just think of that as kind of maybe the beginning of the turning point where I was like, none of this feels like anything. Like, it feels fun to have any kind of attention, you know, but I don't know. It was just.
Well,
a
you watch
where
it, you'll be like, it's those moments, I think, where even though you think you know how everything works, you still are just like everyone else when you watch an award show and you're like, oh, that's so glamorous.
Yeah.
That must be amazing.
Yeah.
And then it happens and you're like, oh, I was just watching a TV show.
Well, and I think there people go, you know, some people probably enjoy it much more and feel really seen and sort of, you know, feel special or feel
seems
princessy
to me.
Or
it
something.
It feels very
yeah.
stressful to me. I just the whole thing. So I went to the Emmys one year, just to. Just
what were you not nominated for?
Everything. Everything. I'm still waiting for the Single Not Lifetime Achievement Award. It's not here yet, but I deserve it. I'm friends with Neil Harris, and he was hosting one year, so
okay, sure.
a group of us went to
right.
support him.
Yeah.
And,
I'm on board.
And it was a very stressful. It was just like the fucking red carpets, this labyrinth yeah. of craziness, and everyone's so like, this is the most important thing, and then you're sandwiched in and the show's long and you're just like, I don't know.
But especially now when, I mean, I would say the most fun parts of those years was going with Sam, who's sitting here. And the
Sam
thing.
Pancake over
Sam
in,
Pancake.
In the corner. Sam Pancake!
But honestly, I learned quickly that even with, you know, work people who I love, it the most fun I was going to get out of the experience was to go with a friend. And Sam, as everyone knows, is the mayor of Hollywood and knows far more people than I will ever know. And so it was just fun to run into people. And then we made it like a good time. But
like celebrity camp.
No. But yeah, because it's work, you know, and it's long.
It is long. And it's I found you know, when I used to go out and drink all the time, it's like the drinking is the thing that you're automatically socializing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're not, at a certain point you're like, oh yeah, this feels like a little bit of effort and work. It's totally chasing the fun. So I'm so glad when I think back of all of those nights where I was doing that exact thing. We're like, mm-hmm. well, can we get into this place and what's mm-hmm. that thing? And oh, you just missed the wave and you got to go to this. Just awful, awful, mm-hmm. awful. I don't
so
miss
glad
it at all.
I don't ever do that.
Well, and it's a different world now too because there's so much more access. For everyone, in terms of when I first moved here, I think there was one tabloid magazine. It was the National Enquirer. There was no Us Weekly. There was no In Touch. There was no Celebrities They're Just Like Us. There was no Whose Cellulite Is This. There was no any of that stuff. And so
the answer is always Kirstie Alley.
Is that?
But there was not the pressure of like everybody knows. Let's just take a moment within. Let's take a moment within, okay?
Those are, they're pretty, they're pretty. I saw one, someone posted on Instagram. It was Jenny Fine, who works at the theater. Mm-hmm. She posted on Instagram something in like Us Magazine. And it actually, it infuriated me so much that I almost tried to launch a campaign against it. Mm. But it was basically the Who Wore It Better thing with kids, with like celebrity kids. Where they were basically rating like, Suri wore this better than whoever.
Why are you guys shocked?
But it's
because
some kids look fucking stupid in that shirt.
And someone
and
said,
other kids look awesome.
And someone said, oh no, they're doing it ironically to be funny. I'm like, but they're still rating these poor kids. Like, that should be fucking so illegal. Like, that should be like paparazziing children and then rating them against one another.
But it all
is
should
fucking
be illegal.
Gross.
It's so, and I think if you're frankly, again, a certain age, this all seems insane. Like, I backed up, this is sort of related, I backed up in my car the other day and it's like beeping and showing me pictures and I'm like, shut up. I know how to back up. I've been backing up since I was 16. Like, I want to put a key in the thing. I don't want the button. I can't find my keys now because my keys are in my bag.
I always don't know where they are.
It's supposed to be convenient and it's not. And this is like, I've turned into my father who was like, what do you need a VCR for? You'll just watch more of TV, you know. Like, and we were like the last people to get a microwave or a VCR, or you know. So I don't need any of it, and it really freaks me out. Like the stuff with the kids and the pictures and the Instagram, and you know, I work with somebody in the morning on Parenthood. It's Twittered in the afternoon. Like it all is freaky to me.
So we're gonna start a photographic feed of your day called Instagram.
I know.
And it's just all Lauren Graham all the time. It'll be essentially be a reality show and still images.
Yes, that's my.
That would totally be the
as
kind
you
of thing
can see
into.
From everything I've been talking about. That would be my
that's
dream.
Totally,
come true.
Exactly. Okay. Let me sweeten the pot a little bit. The picture, whatever you do in your normal day, with the Nashville filter. From Instagram.
I don't know what that is.
Everything's filtering.
Oh.
So they look like old-timey pictures or 70s
so nice.
Pictures. It'll just take us through all. This is what you would have looked like in Mad Men days.
I thought it was just a filter that would put Hayden Panettiere in the photo.
That's exactly. In any or
the
Connie.
Nashville.
Or
exactly.
Connie Britton. It puts Connie Britton in any phonograph.
Wonderful.
Did you say phonograph?
Phonograph.
No, photograph.
I wish you had said phonograph.
Sarsaparilla in the summertime. Do you still talk to any of the old gang anymore?
I do, yeah. Everybody lives... I see Jen and Pete the most, probably.
They have two kids now,
They have two kids. Connie has a kid. And who else were we talking about? I haven't seen Melissa in a while. I don't know. We had like a thing where we had a girls' night. You know, we tried to do that, but you know, you get older and you get busy and time marches on. But yeah, I'm always happy to see that
so
group.
So when's the Gilmore Girls Kickstarter campaign happening?
I pushed for it. I tweeted about it.
I mean, I don't know. This is definitely the question I most asked that I can't believe I haven't formulated a ready answer for yet. Like,
the ready answer is fuck yourself. Like, you can just tell people, like, fuck yourself.
But I can't. I can't tell the nice kids.
You can say that to me, though.
I can say it to you.
Yeah.
Fuck yourself, Chris.
Yeah, see? Oh, it's just like when I used to ask you. This feels very familiar.
I can't understand what I was thinking.
There was one specifically that I remember, and I think it was like the third or fourth time that I had done it. And I don't blame you because, again, I was the messiest. I was a person that I refer to as Peter Hardwick, who was my fat drunk brother. We were at, for some reason, we were at like the Hard Rock or something. We were at the.
No.
It was at a restaurant in the Beverly Center. And, or maybe it wasn't Hard Rock. There was another restaurant there.
The Luxor? The Cheesecake Factory?
No.
California Pizza Kitchen?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
But we were with a group of people there and we went outside to smoke cigarettes. This was maybe like 2001.
Was it that bar, that pub called St. Somebody's? Anyway, go on.
No, St. Nick's. No,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
on 3rd.
Okay.
But this was it. This was, I don't know what we were doing.
Okay.
So we're outside and we're having smokes and I was really drunk and I was like, look, Siri, like I got into I got into like logical mode, like lawyer mode, where I was like, Your Honor, seriously, why wouldn't this happen?
But drunk logic.
Yeah, I love that you're so drunk at a theoretical California pizza kitchen.
Yes.
You fucking lush.
It was theoretical pizza kitchen.
Barbecue chicken pizza and another fucking red stripe.
There hasn't been a California pizza kitchen here for 10 years. More cilantro. But we're standing outside smoking and we were alone, so I was like, it's perfect. And I was like, but seriously, why don't we just, we should totally just go out. And then you looked at me very serious and you were like, why do you think this is going to happen? Like, it was not
so
mean.
Funny.
It wasn't mean. It was just like, it was almost like when, it was almost like I was hitting on my sister's best friend, who was like, seriously, dude, what? Come on, really?
But then I remember.
I think you had pointed out, like, you're kind of a mess. Like, I think you had
I probably saw that, but it doesn't mean I didn't see the crisp beneath. because then I remember conversely, because I went through a time where I feel like then I probably would have gone out with you, but then you were not available.
Right.
Because I went through a time where I was like, hold on, everybody got married. Let me go.
You're going through the book.
I missed it. Not even going through the book, but I was sort of like, what about all those appealing people from my 20s? Where did they go? Oh, they got married? Oh, all right. What about Chris? No? Okay.
Still,
like,
is he still drinking? What's going on? What's the story there?
But where I did redate literally any person that I had ever kind of dated, and it wasn't that many because I mainly was in a relationship, but
right.
So I don't know.
It was a long. So are you a serial monogamous? Was it like long-term relationship to long-term relationship?
Pretty much, yeah. Except for those times when, except for like the Golden Globe years where I was like, I don't know. I presented him with an award and he got my phone number. Like, I guess we'll go out. Like, where it was just like ridiculous.
Oh, now I wonder who that is. Oh.
No. It wasn't that person.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, I just mean like I had never ever gone out with any actors at all, and then suddenly I met a bunch of actors and you know, dated some of them.
Do you feel like you could date someone outside the business, or would you need to have someone who understands kind of what it is without necessarily doing the same thing that you do?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's really, really helpful if you're in the same business. You don't have to do the same branch of it, but one, because I find it really interesting and I love creative people, and there's just a schedule madness to it all that I think is helpful if you can share an understanding of like, this is not 9 to 5 or,
right.
You know,
yeah.
So
there may be some emotional ups and downs.
Sure.
Because if you,
oh, when do the ups come?
Okay. There may be some downs and slightly less downs. But I do like not feeling that like desperation anymore. Mm. That's a really nice feeling. Doesn't mean everything's solved.
No, but look at what you did. I mean, you made your own home in a way of like doing, didn't you? Moment within, moment within. You made something that gives you all these different outlets that is yours. And I think that's kind of what we're both talking about, is you do get to a point where you're like, really? I got to just wait for 50 other people whose agendas are incredibly varied to decide, you know, why
right.
don't I just, maybe I've learned enough at this point that I can, you know, be
just
my own.
Do it yourself.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, obviously, I think, you know, the development of technology made that a lot easier than it was because I remember both sides of it where, you know, in the 90s, you didn't really have a lot of opportunity to just like, oh, let's go make a thing.
No.
What do you mean? I'll write a script. What are you going to do with it?
Perform it in the basement of Happy Happies.
Yeah, exactly. Happy Happies. but definitely now I always tell people, like, there's no excuse anymore to not be able to go do your own thing.
Well, and now the problem is there are so many people doing their own thing. It's how do you make money and how do you get an audience and how, you know, how do you compete with all of the other available.
That's what's kind of exciting about it, though, because
really?
It forces you to figure. It forces you to
right.
be more creative because, you know, because technology has essentially leveled the playing field in that way, at least from a distribution side.
It's like Far and Away, the big land grab, you know?
It's a big land grab, yeah.
And then you see Nicole Kidman's bush at some point. That's like Far and Away, right?
What are we talking about now?
Isn't that the... I'm sorry. That might have been Cold Mountain.
What?
I don't know.
I don't think it's in either of them.
It's in Cold Mountain.
No.
It's in Cold Mountain.
I think it,
it is in Cold Mountain.
It might be in Dead Calm.
Nope. It's in Cold Mountain. You're welcome. Look it up.
But now I think there's certainly much more of an artistic meritocracy in the sense that if your thing works, then it'll bubble up.
Yeah.
Which
kind of brings us back to where it was when we came, which was, you know, if you're... The level playing field then was network television. That was sort of like you have these opportunities, and then slowly cable kind of expanded that playing field, and then now it's even more. And by the way, I still need a network to put this thing on the air, and it's not like a complete. I'm not just performing it in my living room like game night.
You could though.
Again.
You probably have a pretty nice living room as well. I don't think I've been to your house, and I don't know if you live in the same house since the last time.
I think you were at the house that had the like brick patio in the back.
Mm-hmm.
I know you were at that house, and then there was I had sort of a weird mistake house in between. It was like, oops, that was a bad call on every level. And then now,
didn't you come to Rock of Ages one night?
Yes.
And then you had a party or something afterwards, didn't you?
Yes.
When we were doing
yes.
it, I think that was the last time I saw you, which would have been like 2006.
Was it that recent? That seems too recent.
That was 7 years ago.
No, it was yesterday.
That was seven years ago.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
That was at the Vanguard. That's right. That was at the Vanguard.
Were you there?
Yeah, we went.
I know.
And
you were there. Oh, yeah. But then what house was that? Well, then that would have been this house.
Okay. I like that house. That was a nice house.
No, that's the house that I'm in now, I think.
Yeah.
It's a nice little house
you got there.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to bond with Matt Perry, and that didn't... It never works. No. I think because with a guy like Matt, where you kind of go like, all right, he's a funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to appreciate if I come up and be funny at him.
Mm-hmm.
And and I think what you forget is, oh, everyone does that.
Yeah.
So he was fine. He was fine. But I think I thought, oh, we're going to really connect.
Yeah.
And when we didn't.
I could see you really connecting, though, in a different circumstance.
Right.
I mean,
we go to the Golden Globes together.
No, not there. Don't look for your connections there. It's not good.
What's more stressful, the Golden Globes or the Emmys? Are they both just...
I don't know. I mean, it is... I don't mean to take the fun out of it. There is an aspect of, oh my God, I can't... Every time you go to something like that is... I never get over it. And I... So the Golden Globes, which I only went to... Maybe just that one, maybe twice. It is more, you're packed in. There's sort of a party atmosphere and everything's right there. And again, the way the world has changed now, these parties and the world of these shows has gotten so big. It's not just the people who are there. It's like, it feels like it's been opened up a little bit.
When people present, is it always so awkward? Are they just seeing the copy for the first time on the prompter, or are they trying to,
why
is it so awkward?
So the last time I presented was with Matthew, and they had given us some comedy, and we...
Quotation marks?
Take some comedy.
And we'd kind of worked on our own thing, because we were like, what's more fun than the two of us who are friends, and we'll talk about it, and we'll make it better and we'll be funny and that'll be fun. And then we got there and they said, we're cutting all the chit chat. So just go out and present. And we were like, but all of our chit chat that we've worked on for days now. And so at the last minute we were like, well, what if we, okay, say this. And we made some joke about his show, Mr. Sunshine, that was really predicated on knowing friends. It didn't go well, and so we were both so kind of horrified, and then like, because we had, I think we presented two awards, and then like the guy runs out at the, you know, while they're showing the clip, and he's like, okay, that was funny, but just do the copy, okay?
Oh,
just
no,
do the copy.
No.
And we were like, but we don't even have a chance to. So I think that the, you know, because they're trying to keep these things to a limit,
right?
They've kind of taken, I mean, not at the Golden Globes, and I thought when Tina Fey and Amy Poehler hosted that they loosened it up again, but there's pressure, you know, and you have all these people telling you how to do it and what to do, and so I think it, I don't know, it all feels stressful, but that was particularly stressful.
Is that the kind of thing that bothers you for the next
bothered right now, and I had forgotten about it, sort of.
Oh, you're like, upset about it.
Oh my God, that I will like walk away, and because the
let's
problem
go to a
is
clip.
That was good, but just do the copy.
I'll just stick to the copy.
No, because then if the problem is I have done it again in my mind and it's gone really well.
Yeah.
But you'll never see that version because it's in the past. And so, you know.
You wanted to come back from the clip and you're like, yeah. Okay, guys, here's what just happened. Just so you know, yeah. We worked on this thing and yeah. Then we did, but then you didn't know.
Oh,
and then
my
he
God.
Said, so we're just going to make
and
it right.
Other
we're just
joke,
make
we
it
had
right.
Another joke and that would have been better and we should have done that.
Okay, what was that
minute.
One? What was that one? Do you remember?
It was something, yes, of course I do, because I've been traumatized for life. It was something to the effect of, they've told us that we've run out of time for chit-chat, so we're just going to present the award. Aw, we can't do that joke? No. Aw, that was funny. Yeah.
That's too bad. Too bad.
And then we laugh at our own joke that you don't know, the audience, because, see, this would have tanked too.
No,
and then,
no.
And so then we, it's just a little more inside of the, we've been told we can't do chit chat, and then we, oh, we can't tell that thing. Oh, okay. And then we laugh. And hopefully you laugh along and that's it.
See, that I think that totally would have worked.
Yeah.
Particularly is if you had laughed at like three or four jokes and taken up the same amount of time talking
yeah.
about how you couldn't tell those
yes,
jokes.
Yes, exactly. Well, that was
totally
the
works.
Idea of the sort of whatever. That was the idea. And then at the last minute, we were like, what if that doesn't go well? They won't understand. And then, you know, we did something else.
You should have also said in there, can you guys just scroll prompter and then just chuckle as the
And then just go, Nicole Kidman's Bush, and then run off stage.
But yeah, so I don't know. It's just another thing. And then I was supposed to present to, oh my God. You're always in the waiting room with some assortment of people and it should feel like this brotherhood. And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And I've tried to talk to Betty White. Wasn't that the same year?
Same year.
And I don't remember what I said, but she
was
didn't.
She
misheard
rocker?
Me. No. I don't know, whatever. I always walk away from those like, damn it, you messed it up again. How can you, why don't you just like be normal? I still like feel like I'm in junior high. Like I'm always like, excuse me, Ms. White. I'm like, I'm in a corseted gown too. Like, why can't we all be enjoying the fruit platter? But no, I get like really stressed out. So I think it's just, there's some combination of like what makes me anxious and show business, which is just like not a good match, even though it's what I do.
Well, that's just that's a very human thing. And we all do that, and
yeah.
You know, I think to an extent that's probably what I did with Matt.
Yeah,
was just sort of feeling like this is my moment, you know,
yeah.
Like where
yeah.
you just don't want to. When really you can just be like, hey, how's it going? You know.
But also, I think when you're a certain kind of person, you really come at it from such a fan place and such an appreciation, and like you're vulnerable. And I would much rather come from there and be destroyed than like. I definitely have seen the other way people can go, which is supreme entitlement, and that probably you feel much better, probably happier. But I just don't like. I just feel like I would rather feel I never belong and I will never belong than yeah, this is my town. You know, it just like grosses me.
Well, the former, you've essentially just described this podcast. So like, hey, this is really exciting.
Yeah, really, guys, I can do this again.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And it's only sort of worked against us one time.
Which was?
We haven't put it up yet.
Oh, okay.
It was Harrison Ford.
Oh.
It was Harrison Ford.
And what do you mean your
worked against
them? I mean the sort of where you get super...
nervous?
Yeah, because
yeah.
I don't really...
I watched him on Kimmel, and pretty much Kimmel got the same Harrison Ford.
He got the same?
Yeah.
It's. I mean, he was fine, but it's very rare that I get any more. I mean, just because we've done so many of these that
yeah.
I'm a lot more comfortable than when we started. But there's maybe there's a couple people in the world where you're just like,
yeah,
like you can't, because on a molecular level, that person is just programmed into your cells, yeah, and you can't, you know, just of who they were to, yeah, you. And no matter how hard, you know, like normally I can be like, I can crush that down to kind of make this happen.
I could not crush it down.
But I understand, and you can't be hard on yourself, because I couldn't understand that more. And how, what could you do? You can't be. I played Diane Keaton's daughter in a movie, and you know, the whole time I was a mess. I was like, I know, right? Annie Hall, like, is just so crazy. And she was like a friend to me.
Cut, why is she ending every line with Annie Hall?
Lauren, the line is Nicole Kidman's bush, and then you're supposed to run off camera.
Oh my God, she was nothing but nice to me and kind. And she, and I've mentioned this in the acknowledgments in the book, she is a person who, for some reason, she said to me, you know, you should write a book. And that was, I don't know why, and I don't know what was going on, but honestly, that put it in my mind, because she was so much to me that I thought, well, if she thinks I can do it, like, you know, and why it takes Diane Keaton, you know, I don't know, why not? I'm sure my father's like, what about when I said you could do things?
You're not Diane Keaton.
Yeah. But so, you know,
you still
that
have
changed.
A BCR, Dad.
Yeah. Oh my God. But that changed my life, you know, and so what are you going to do?
Well, that's
listen
good.
To Diane Keaton.
I think it's good to still have those experiences. I think it's good to not be jaded by things and, yeah, still enjoy things and still be surprised and still be excited by things. It definitely means you're still doing the right thing, because the day that it's all boring to you, yeah, is just like, then you should stop. You should really
Well,
stop.
And I think maybe it's just a life it's a life goal for you, let's take in your Harrison Ford situation,
yeah,
to let yourself be more, you know, feel differently next time. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, particularly if you're in a situation where you're, and I don't think necessarily what we do on the show is interview people, is sort of like have coffee chats, mm-hmm, and just like conversations. But the most devastating thing that you can let happen if you're in that type of situation is to be afraid of the person,
right,
that you're talking to.
Right.
Once you're scared, you can't,
right,
because your brain scrambles. You know, you go all lizard brained, and you're just like, you're just knots inside. And, you know, all I can say is, and honestly, I think it was okay. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, and he was fine, but I think it, I mean, he rolled with it, but I definitely just think that, you know, it's a human reaction. It's just a human reaction.
But did you feel like, because of the state you were in, it altered how he was? That if you'd been able to be more comfortable,
no,
maybe you could have gotten...
Maybe, but he seems to enjoy when people are squirming, mm, in a way that's sort of like... I think it's sort of fun. I think he thinks, hmm, it's kind of amusing in a way. I mean, he was fine, but it definitely... I feel like, because his sense of humor is very... He's very dry sense of humor. Mm. And I think if I had been more able to be present and not so much in this mode, mm-hmm, that I would have fucked around with that more, mm-hmm, as opposed to, Mosquito Coast.
I have another thing in the world of chasing the fun, though, which is it's the more famous person's job to make it okay. Like, and this came upon, and they shall remain nameless, but I was like shopping in some store in New York, and someone who I had met and knew like many times was also shopping in the store, and I was like, well, I'm not gonna bother them, because it's on them, like, if it's on them to be like, hey, remember we met at the thing, and if they're not gonna do it, I'm not gonna do it,
right?
Because it's their, I don't know where this is, just like the rules I make up in my mind. So
no,
to
I think
me
that's a valid rule.
To me, I think if you're Harrison Ford, you know part of that responsibility, or, you know, maybe not, but I would feel like maybe it's his job to know how nervous people are and to, you know,
maybe, but then them. But then my answer to that would be, I should be more, I should have been more professional, in the sense that I should have had it a little more under control. Cause it's the only time it's ever happened,
right,
out of 400 shows that we've done.
You were off your game.
Because I was so like, I was fine until I got there. I felt like, yeah, I got this.
Yeah.
There were moments where I felt like I had to jump in with questions just because you were just like
you're making this worse.
Like, you would process, processing his answer, and you were overthinking. And then I was like, okay, there's going to be silence here unless I ask a question.
Oh my God.
But it was, and thank you for that. But but it's just like I was all fine, and then I sat down, and he was a foot from me.
Yeah.
And it just, I just wasn't, nothing could have prepared me.
Yeah.
Nothing could have prepared me for that. And there are maybe three people in the world, like him, Steve Martin, like Bill Murray. There's only like a couple people where I'd be like,
yeah,
because of who they meant to me when I was,
But that's okay, isn't it? I mean, isn't that okay?
Unless you're a podcast listener.
Well, but so the podcast listener gets the insight into what that experience was.
I guess
And probably identifies with it. I mean, this is what my little girly novel is about, because I am still learning this lesson over and over and over again, and it's better than it used to be, but I have had those experiences too where I'm like, really? After all this time? I can't, I mean, you know, it's, things have been going fine and I can't like hold it together and just feel like, you know, some ease and but I think that's the nature of being very hard on yourself, which
sure.
is how you got here. So, you know, you can only be thankful that you're a human being.
Well, and honestly, you sort of like those moments are kind of a gift because it reminds you that you still care about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it also reminds you, it also teaches you, like, it was such an amazing, wonderful lesson. And like, you don't have to be afraid of anyone. Like, you could just talk to anybody.
And they'd probably prefer if you weren't.
Exactly, exactly. Because that just sort of feeds into the thing that they're used to. I'm sure you've met people before and you start kind of fanning on them and they don't let you off the hook.
Right.
If people come up to me like at Comic-Cons and stuff and they're like, oh, I watch talk, you know, listen to the podcast, I'm always like, hey, it's totally cool. Like, I always want them to feel like I'm not going to blow you up. I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
But just sometimes you see there are some people who are so much at this other stratum that when they sense fan mode, they just kind of like glaze over because it's the thing to them.
Well, it's for what they have to do for safety or to just like get through the day.
Yeah.
And there are some of those people who I don't know how you do it at certain levels. It seems really unappealing, you know.
Where you have no life left, really.
Yeah, no place you can go. And, like, you bite into your sandwich and people are like, king, 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 picture, 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 Twitter, you know, like, there's so it's hard. It's hard to be Sam Pancake, you know what I'm saying?
How do you do it, Sam?
I don't even know.
There was a whole physical component to that comment that made me just enjoy that.
Sam is hilarious.
I hope you get the opportunity to hang out with Sam. I really hope you get the opportunity to hang out with Sam Pancake.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
He's one of the funniest people that you could hang out with.
It's true.
Did you do Groundlings, Sam?
I didn't.
You didn't? Did you do any improv?
Nice. But I work with all those people again and again.
You know all those people. That's the proximity.
When does this come on the air?
Is there a particular time that's better for you?
I think I sound best between the hours.
Between the months of September.
Because
and
Sam
November.
Has a show.
You don't have to talk.
Well, it's your show.
Why wouldn't I?
Sammy, promote your show.
Oh, it's called Stronger Choices. It's me and Drew Droege, who's a comic mastermind. Like asshole life coaches.
It is the one of the funniest things and I've ever seen. It's so funny. The characters are so great, and to me it is a show that needs to be seen. They're life coaches, which you know.
Is it a live show?
Yeah.
Say it on the microphone so people hear it.
August 20th and 21st at Casita del Campo.
Yes.
And called Stronger Choices. It's the sequel about two asshole life coaches who used to be lovers and now just live in a van in Temecula. And in an abandoned puppy mill, they've turned into a mancation retreat.
Okay.
And they have life lessons for you.
So I will put this up before August 20th so that you can go see that show.
Yeah. It's really, really good. And it's one of those things where it's like that once Sam achieves his like stature that he so deserves, then I will retire from show business because I will have all my dreams answered. Like it just will, everything will make sense in the world.
Well, yeah, I mean, I but you're making a show for CW, so
yeah.
Do you feel?
Oh yeah. He'll be in it 100%. But I
play the lead, right?
And yeah. You'll be playing the 26-year-old girl. Of course you will. I believe in you. No, that would be. I mean, I'm just trying to manage my expectations and like one step at a time. But so far, I'm writing the pilot. I love it. It's, you know, I'm really attached to this story, and it would be amazing to get it on the air, and it would be amazing to see it be a show and see, you know, among other things, all the people who I
if you
love.
Do it, if you do a table read, you just want to hear it out loud.
Yeah.
And there are dude things in there. I will just come read it with you.
You're crazy, but of course you will do that. Yeah,
I'll just invite myself to do that, even though there might not be.
Well, hang on, maybe there's a sarcastic older fat man.
Well, the thing is,
than the 26-year-old.
Oh, older than 26-year-old lead. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing is, and I don't even care anymore. The girl works as a waitress in a comedy club, and one of the things that I really want to do is have an opportunity for comic cameos.
Oh, that's perfect.
And yeah, so you're in.
I love it.
Yeah, you can play
Fart's a
David
weird.
Tell who worked the door.
Fart's and the weird. Guy's crying.
Yes.
And the garbage hits. I mean,
that's all I need of the joke. I don't even need the
whole
joke.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
And what is your book called?
The book is called Someday, Someday, Maybe. The working title for the show right now is called Unfamous.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
It is so good to see you again.
So good to see you.
I'm sorry seven years went by without us hanging out.
Let's not let it happen again.
It's not going to happen again, Lauren
it's
Graham.
It's going to happen again, probably. Good.
Shut up.
I mean, you're both very busy.
We're all reconnected. We
come on.
Time. We'll do a game night one night and be like, everyone, chill the fuck out.
And we'll do a game night and remember why we stopped having
it. Stop chasing the fun.
Yeah.
All right. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
All right.
Lauren Graham.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.